Welcome to the Philippe Matthews Show at thepmshow.tv. Named the Oprah of the Internet by Mark Victor Hansen, Philippe Matthews doesn't ask questions that are different. He simply asks questions that make a difference. The Philippe Matthews Show features entertainers, bestsellers, authors, thought leaders, change agents, and world-class experts in the field of personal, spiritual, and professional development. An internet marketing entrepreneur, Philippe is the creator of the How Movement, dedicated to teaching people how to move from the mindset of hope to the process of how. If you are ready to take your life to the next level, move from the mindset of why to the mindset of why not. Tune in right now to this latest edition of the Philippe Matthews Show and watch your life grow.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Philippe Matthews Show. Today I've got a great guest, as I always do. I always have great guests, but this guy is a little extra great. Once I discovered his story, and Lord knows it took him forever, or took me forever, to find out about his story, not to to his chagrin, but, I mean, it was just a situation where I was so busy, I almost missed a phenomenal story that the world needs to know about, and particularly our kids that are suffering right now, if they're suffering from, you know, gang violence, child abuse, both verbal and physical, abject poverty. This is the guy that single-handedly, through Christ, took it on. How are you, Andrew Ross?
I'm excellent. Thank you, sir.
So how's that for an introduction, right? Listen, you wrote a book called Nine Lives, Finding a Way Out. Of course, I have to start the interview with, why did you title the book Nine Lives?
Well, Nine Lives talks about the different times that I was close to death, whether it was when I went through a major brain operation at the age of 19, or where I was jumped in the street and left for dead, different shootouts that I were in because of gang involvement, my battle with depression and bipolar as growing up and being a atmosphere of depression where it led me to almost kill myself a couple of times. And by the grace of God, it didn't happen. I tried to shoot myself in the head a number of times. That didn't work. I tried to jump in front of a truck. That didn't work. And my whole thing, when I say nine lives, is just that I know God's unmerited favor on me has propelled me to deftly write this book and tell people about the greatness of Him, and also, you know, to also teach others that no matter what they might be going through, they can make it out as well too.
Wow, that is unbelievable. I mean, yeah, I guess you do have nine lives, huh?
Yeah.
You probably probably like Purina Cat Chow as well.
I just can't jump out the window and land on all fours, so
no,
that's one thing I can't
do. Try it either. Hey, we've had enough of all of the trying of it. Stop all of that.
Yes.
And let's talk about living and living your life on purpose. When I look at this, when I look at your life story, I just it's miraculous because you had many opportunities not to be here, but by the grace of God, there go I, you are here, and thank God that you are still here with us, and fully present and fully cognizant and contributing. What a blessing that is.
Thank you.
So I want to talk about the chapters in this book, because each chapter is, you know, this is a book, ladies and gentlemen, you won't be able to put down. So don't get this book and just expect that you'll just be watching shows or something in between. This is a book that you're going to have to study. You're going to have to sit down, and it's going to grab you, and it's going to hit you right between the eyes. The first chapter I want to talk about is what you call Finding Your Way Out of Abuse. And you subtitle it, I'm Afraid of Changing, How, because I built a life around you. What do you mean by I'm afraid to change? How? Because I built a life around you.
Well, I look at the whole thing as growing up in a very abusive household. My father had a really tight grip on my mother and me and my sister and brother. And my mother did not was not able to work. She wasn't able to have friends. And, you know, he kept us isolated in the house to the point where every time we went to bed, he would board up the back doors. He would seal up the front doors. And when he died 7 years ago, my mother did not know how to live. She was afraid of changing. She was afraid of living on her own. My brother and my sister suffered with depression, and they suffered
No, I'm just saying, wow.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, the isolation and the lack of socialization and the lack of having friends and the lack of having family connections. It was like, okay, how do we do this now? He's gone. He's had a tight grip on us for so long. What do we do now? So he was very controlling with the finances and with the things inside the house. So when I say I'm afraid of changing because I built my life around you, talks about my story, but it also touches on a lot of individuals on the outside who are currently in abusive relationships or they build their self around a man or a woman and they forget about their own self.
And so when that man or woman is gone, they don't have an identity anymore. They don't know who they are.
Right. There's an empty void there that, you know, 9 times out of 10, what happens is that they pick up the same man that just let them go. Or the same woman that just let them go. And it's a vicious cycle. And by the time they know it, they have no true identity. And, you know, the abuse continues verbally, physically, sexually. And, you know, it's just lifelong.
So how did you work through this? When your father, I mean, obviously your father died, and then your mother kind of just... it kind of almost became a vegetable in the sense that it just wasn't able to cope. How did you handle that? And you had brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I got one brother and I got one sister, which is currently going through it right now. You know, my dad died. The whole thing for me was trying to get my mother out the house as much as possible, trying to see her as much as possible, trying to talk to her as much as possible, trying to get her to interact with other individuals, which wasn't easy because as soon as he died, she went straight to the alcohol and the bottle.
Oh,
and one of her turning points is that she OD'd off alcohol and ended up in the hospital in Far Rockaway, Queens, which is a turning point for her. But she realized little by little that my dad was a good dad, but he had these issues that he refused to deal with. So she didn't want to go through the rest of her life not dealing with these issues, these emptiness, this loneliness, this insecurity, this jealousy that was coming up out of nowhere. And so with the support of myself, my sister, and my brother, and also a couple of friends that go see her once in a while, you know, take her out to get a pizza, call her up, you know, make sure she's watching her favorite TV show, which she wasn't able to do before.
That is unbelievable. That is amazing. I hear of this all the time. It's just fascinating to hear it when it's a personal story like this. It's just amazing what happens. How young were you? Because I remember reading about one of your suicide attempts was taking a syringe and pumping ice water into your veins or something of sort.
Yes.
Is that right? How young were you when you just decided this is just too much, I want to get out of here?
I had to be between the age of 17 and 19 when this happened.
Wow.
And it was the abuse, the sexual abuse inside the home. There was their physical abuse inside the home. There was the bullying outside the home. So I had nowhere to turn. Depression kicked in. So you see, you know what? You know, I don't, you know, there's no God. At that point, I didn't believe in God because all these bad things were happening to me. So I got a syringe one day, filled it up with cold water, stuck it in my left arm. And the only thing that happened was my arm got cold. But doing extensive research right now, that's a form of trying to freeze your heart. So my whole thing was just to end it. And I think during my whole doubt with the attempts of suicide, the suicidal ideations, with, you know, taking a large amount of drugs and pills and alcohol, to the point where it's inside the book as well too, that I would take so much cocaine that I would hallucinate so much that I would stick razors up my nose because I thought that there was evil spirits inside of me that I needed to get out, only to know that I was damaging the inside of my nose, which would make me hemorrhage. So then my mother would come by the house and see these sheets full of blood, and she would tell me, she said, "Oh my God, what's going on here?" I said, "Mom, I'm, you know, it's coming out of my nose." And every time I talk about that story, it's more touching, because I was like, I could have died, but God had His hand on me despite whichever way I was turning. He was still there.
My gosh. I remember you telling me a story, too, about you got attacked by a rival gang. So you were trying to get out, actually, and as you say, there's no really true way out.
Mm-hmm.
Of a gang situation, and they actually came at you with a lead pipe. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. This occurred in 1990, and I was running with a gang in the Bronx. And what happened is that me and the gang decided to do some robberies that evening, and you know, we didn't get caught by the cops. However, the guy caught me alone by myself about a month later. I seen him pass by me. I was on the phone with my mother early one morning just talking to her. He passed by me. I thought nothing of it. He went in the store. He came back out and gave me one hit in the head where I fell straight out. I lost my speech and I lost the feeling in my left side of my body. So the ambulance and everything came. You know, they rushed me to the hospital. As soon as I went into the hospital, I went into a seizure where they had to open me up. They had to get, you know, permission to open me up. I had a blood clot in the brain. They opened me up. They popped the blood clot in the brain. And as they was wheeling me out to go into a recovery room, I went into another seizure, and they had to roll me right back in there where I went into a coma. Now, my mother and my father made it up there, and they told my mother and my father that I will not make it through the evening. So
wow.
They called the priest up by my bedside to pray by my bedside. And once again, by the grace of God, He had pulled me out of that as well, too. And I think about that story, and it almost makes me tear up every time I think about that, because the greatness of Him, no matter what, if He has a plan for your life, He has a plan for your life.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do about it. Even if you decide to take your own will back, you know, His plan is perfect.
I like that. I like that a lot, that that when you are chosen and when you are chosen to do something, there's nothing you can do to stop it. It's your destiny, and you're supposed to be here and do something.
Yes.
I absolutely believe that. Finding your way out of codependency, the mm-hmm. need to be needed, exceptionally powerful. Talk to us about that.
Definitely. So, you know, right after that chapter one, I'm afraid of changing because I built my life around you, is chapter two, which is the need to be needed, finding my way out of codependency, which talks about my need to need somebody at all given times. My need to be in a relationship no matter what, my need to be around people, even if when I was around people, I still felt lonely, I still needed to be around people. And mm-hmm. the saddest part about it, I would surround myself around women who were HIV positive, have sex with them unprotected because they told me they loved me.
Mm.
And they told me that, listen, I love you. I'm going to be here for you no matter what. Unprotected sex is okay. I had unprotected sex. And I have to say to you, for probably like the fifth time already, by the grace of God, I am HIV negative. And this is something that, this is an issue that other individuals can ID with today, because there's a lot of this stuff going on today about individuals with the insecurity, the low self-esteem, the accepting anybody into their life no matter what, and mm-hmm. individuals being married. going out and having sex with individuals who are HIV positive, and it's a major big issue. But it was almost like I was trying to satisfy. It's almost like I was trying to satisfy a love itch, but the utensil was too short to reach the spirit.
No, I like that. I like that a lot. Well said.
You know,
well said. Finding your way out of darkness. You basically had a battle between you, God, and as you say, the devil.
Oh, wow, yes.
That was a crazy chapter, man. Talk to me about that battle between these three forces, because you are a force of nature yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, growing up, like I said before, the abuse that was inside the home and inside the home and outside the home, I really didn't believe there was a God, because all this bad stuff was happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for me to push the bullies away, I had to think of a master plan to really have them be scared of me. So I said, you know what? Let me start worshiping the devil. Let me buy the Satanic Bible. Let me start doing some rituals. Let me start hurting people. Let me start hurting myself. Let me prove to the devil that I'm committed to him. And I tell you, Mr. Matthews, this is no lie. I have encountered a whole different spiritual realm, which was extremely interesting, which had me almost, the spirits just coming through my body and going through my body, and you could feel the wind. And I mean, you know, Satan's ultimate goal is to kill and destroy you. And I would cut myself, and you know, it was something interesting that I had a cult out there. But what happened is that it reversed on me. So yeah, the bullies left me alone, but also other people decided to stay away from me, which put me into a state of isolation and abusing drugs even more.
Wow. My goodness. It's again, every time I hear this again and again, it's amazing how you obviously are chosen. It's amazing how you got out of that. Most people don't live past that. They just say, when was your last suicidal episode? How old were you?
My last suicide episode was when I was 27. And what happened then is that I decided to go on a drinking binge and a cocaine binge.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on a binge for a whole weekend. And what happened is that, I ended up, running out of money and everything, and then a depression kicked in, and I was by the pier, and I was trying to jump off the pier, but the spirit was like, no. And then, you know, I kept praying, and then I wound up trying to jump in front of a truck over here on West 4th Street in the city where the traffic is high over here, and I couldn't, something was holding me back. It was like God saying, no, this is not what I had planned for you. You know, to get through this, you know, get yourself together. I got a plan for you. And I heard those words. And at that point, I asked for help.
Well, I want to talk about the help and your finding Christ with Bishop. But I want to talk about the isolation. You talk about this in one of the chapters, and you felt like a caveman, because the life that you were living with all of the mental deliberations, you completely felt like no one else in the world is going through what you're going through. And talk to me about that sense of complete and total isolation.
Well, it was interesting because it was more of isolating from the world, grabbing the drugs and going into a little room and just isolating myself in there. While driving myself crazy, because the drugs exacerbated the whole thing with the satanic stuff and whatever else was going on in my mind, which caused me to actually literally climb through the walls and the ceilings of my house trying to get away from the spirits.
Wow.
And, you know, my mother came over one day and she couldn't believe what she's seen. She's like, what's going on with you? I said, Mom, you don't understand. There's evil spirits in the house. I got to get them out. And they was, it was definitely, I tapped into a whole spiritual realm where isolation became, my best friend. And, it was definitely a journey, and we know you cannot grow in isolation. You can't grow in the dark. This particular chapter, I had got some reviews from some folks who definitely were going through stuff like this and stated that, you know, their isolation is causing them to be depressed, is causing mm-hmm. them to push family members away, is causing them to drink, is causing them to do drugs, is causing them to go on the internet and go to pornography, because right now you can get everything you want on the internet and isolate. Mm-hmm. And then you can also die in isolation as well too. So that was that experience with that. And you know, now with the whole thing, you know, as I'm developing as a man in Christ, and I'm teaching other individuals exactly how to get through struggles, how to get through issues, how to rely on God. I do different things for myself right now. So my mind is definitely I always have positivity on my mind. I'm always doing something to empower myself. I'm also doing something to take care of my temple. And my mind, so I can be here for other individuals. The ultimate goal for me and this book is to definitely reach out to individuals, to go out into the trenches, to go out to different parts of the country, to go out to different cities, speak to the youth, speak to the parents, and implement change. Because the book itself, the feedback I got so far is that it has caused people so far to go into a deep meditation. It has caused people so far to go into a state of change. It caused people so far to really get in contact with some feelings that they haven't dealt with for years, as far as with mm-hmm. the abuse, as far as with the addiction, as far as with the anger they had for their mother and father, for their, mm-hmm. as far as with their unforgiveness. Yeah.
I love this. You, during that isolation, you were basically addicted to pain.
I was, yeah, and that leads right into the next chapter. And you know, I always say it. I say it laughing now, but you know, I tell some people that I talk to that they have a high tolerance for pain, because even growing up, my tolerance for pain, I mean, I would smoke so much crack that I would throw up black stuff and still wait for that stuff to turn clear before I smoke again. I would drink so much until I caught all ulcers. I would sniff so much until my nose just wouldn't stop bleeding. I would pop so many pills, whereas, you know, I would just lay there and just know I wasn't going to wake up. And, you know, and it's very interesting, because even though I knew what the cause was, I had no strategies to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Andrew, so who was your abuser, you say sexually abused, and physically and emotionally, who was your abuser in your family?
Well, it was coming, and it was my parents were swingers, so they would have individuals coming in and out the home when they used to have orgies. And what happened is I was exposed to a lot of that stuff. I was overly sexually stimulated through the movies and through even seeing the orgies as well, too.
Mm.
So, you know, like I said before, I would create the isolation for myself in the living room by putting the two black chairs together, which is inside the book, and watching men and women go right around those two black chairs to my mother and father's room, where they would have group sex.
Wow. So you became the sex early in life, which you, as you said earlier, that was your kind of way of numbing the pain, but it was kind of also just acting out and kind of moving into that whole generational situation.
Yeah, sex became one of those things that it was an instant gratification thing. it came to the point that the relationships I was experiencing as growing up was empty relationships, because the only way I knew how to communicate was through sex. So after sex, we couldn't talk.
Wow. Okay. That's
so my communication skills were not sharp. Only thing I knew how to feel that feeling and have you feel that feeling as well too. And later on, as I started to mature a little bit more, I realized it's not all about the sex. It's about, you know, living an obedient life, and then, you know, challenging yourself to meet different people and being able to communicate with them, learn how to talk to them, learn how to go out with them, learn how to say different, you know, learn how to learn about them first and do an interview with them first to find out what they want out of life instead of jumping into the bed. And by, you know, by the grace of God, my pastor has provided me with the four steps to establishing a healthy relationship, where I go around the different parts of the city and the different parts of the country, and then I teach teenagers and also parents about that as well, too.
Did you want to share those four processes?
Sure, definitely. The first one is introduction, and the introduction phase talks about, you know, just going, just, you know, saying my name is Andrew, what's your name, where are you from, they tell you where they're from, and at that point, you can either say yay or nay to stay inside that encounter with that individual. If you decide to move on, next one is called acquaintance. The acquaintance a little bit more, you know, I know your name, you know, I know where you're from, you have a number, yeah, you want to exchange numbers, you want to go out for some coffee, cool. You know, you ask these questions to them, you ask different questions, the way you see yourself in 5 years, you know, what's your view on finances, what's your view on spirituality. At this point right here, you still have the opportunity to say yay or nay.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to say yay, then you go to the third step, which is friendship. Friendship gets a little bit deeper because you're saying, you know what, this person might be a valuable asset in my life, and I can really see something happening between me and this individual. You start going out more. You start talking on the phone a little bit more. At this point right here, you still have that opportunity to say yay or nay. If you decide to say yay, the next step is intimacy, which will hopefully be in the contents of marriage, but nowadays individuals are going from introduction to intimacy and then having to learn about the individual later on,
mm-hmm.
which causes all types of confusion, depression, insecurities, and jealousy, and it gets crazy. So those steps taken like that can lead to unhealthy relationships. Introduction to intimacy usually happens within a week or two, and individuals usually fight in the following week. Because we know that the whole thing with sex is supposed to stay in the contents of marriage. And how do I know it works? Because I tried it. I mean, it's something that, you know, I did the introduction to intimacy and we got crazy. And then I did the introduction to friendship, and it became healthy.
Talk to me about when you met Dr. A.R. Bernard
at CCC Christian Cultural Center. A friend of mine told me, said, Andrew, come down to my church. And, you know, I was going back and forth with different religions, Catholic, being Baptist, 5%er, Islam. So he said, come down to my church. I came down to the church located on Flatlands in Brooklyn. And I heard this pastor talking. I was like, wow. You know, he was like, you know, he was sharing a message on no matter what you might be going through, you know, you can get through what you have to go. You can get through whatever you're going through. You can maximize your highest potential. And I'm like, wow. He said, okay, if you're here for the first time and you have never gave your life over to the care of God and got saved, just raise your hand where you're at. So I'm like, okay, I'll raise my hand, and then I put my hand down. He said, those that raise your hand, please make your way to the front. And as I went to the front, he prayed over everybody that was there. And then I cried. And I was like, wow, it's an experience. But he said one thing before I walked away from it. He said, listen, just because you got saved doesn't mean things are going to stop happening.
Mm-hmm.
the devil is going to get more sophisticated, so you have to stay in prayer and you have to stay in the study. And what happened after that, that was like about 10 years ago, that same week, I decided to go back out and drink. And I was like, wow, I went on a binge like a whole week and almost OD'd off the alcohol and everything as well too. But I was like, wow, I'm saved. Why is this happening to me? And it's not about that. The devil doesn't want me to be saved. The closer the relationship I get with God, the closer work I do for Him, the closer to His will and His purpose that I am, the more sophisticated the devil gets. So I went through a whole binge for the whole week, and they said, I said, you know what? No, this is not why I got saved. And put the bottle down and haven't drank since. Wow. And, the devil's been coming at me on different angles and stuff like that. Even writing this book, it's very interesting because I went through a whole different mind frame just to put this stuff on paper because I wanted to almost relive it so people could they could feel my story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I'm sure it was very cathartic walking through all of that again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So where are you now? So talk to us about the programs that you have for the youth. And also, how can people get in contact with you in terms of a web address or online?
Yeah, definitely. So right now, I'm currently the CEO and founder of Dreams and Motivation, which is a company that focuses on fitness training, motivational speaking, motivational coaching, and also writing. I'm also in school now for my PhD program in business and organizational leadership, whereas I'm going to use to implement change in different communities and in order to develop leaders in the home and outside the home. I do a lot of volunteer work with HIV programs. I do a lot of volunteer work with young men's programs throughout New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I do volunteer work. I do boot camp classes for the kids and for the parents as well, too, so they can work out together and encourage each other. If people want to get in contact with me, they can contact me at www.dreamthemotivation.com. I will even give my personal phone number, and that number is 917-297-1033. They can purchase the book, Nine Lives, Finding a Way Out, at Amazon.com, and they can also request for me to come to their city, to their state, any part of the world, to come give a speaking event based on each chapter inside the book. And one last thing, the book itself has three parts. There's the real talk, what happened to me in my life, and then there's the second part, to every chapter, and that's the turning points, what I did to help me get through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's spark plugs at the end of every chapter, which are questions for the reader to answer, and I provided a journal behind every chapter for people to write.
Love it. Love it. Andrew Ross, you are an incredible gift and force. Thank you so much for sharing your story with me and with us. And I would love for you to come back and talk about even more of what you're up to and help more lives become empowered.
Anytime.